Jill Helmer. Welcome to V the People.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited.
Bailey's excited to be here,
Bailey's
too.
Here with us, everyone. Jill's eight-year-old golden retriever. Do you want to share what she's going through, or is it too hard to talk about?
No, it's not actually. So she is going through, she was diagnosed in November with stage 4 lymphoma, like absolutely out of the blue, at least for us.
How did they find it?
So she did. She is a lot like her mother and really likes a good meal to anchor her, you know, when she gets up and when she goes to bed. So her appetite was off for probably 12 hours, which is very unusual. And it wasn't accompanied by anything else, right? So you were like, okay. And we went, she obviously was lethargic. I thought, well, it's a Sunday because every animal has an issue when the vet isn't open, in my experience. And so I was thinking, I think, you know, I might take her to get her checked out. And we went outside. It was one of those really windy days, and she was like sucking the air in, and I was like, okay, that doesn't look right. And so I know everyone here thought I was a little bit paranoid, but I came in and put my coat on, and we went to the emergency vet. And honestly, on the way over, she became worse, and I was really freaked out about whether we were going to make it there. And we made it there, and she spent 3 days there, and they did loads of testing, but that is what they discovered. But the bright side is that she has been, we have a great oncologist. So do you do advertisements?
Yeah, please.
So anyone who is ever looking for an oncologist in the Lehigh Valley, Dr. Christine Mullen at Valley Central is amazing. And she's only here 1 day a week. She's actually in the Philly area the other days of the week. She's been fantastic. And Bailey has been responding really well to treatment.
Oh, she's so sweet.
She is so sweet.
Don't be afraid to like really get into your microphone.
Okay.
You know?
Yes.
I feel like people get a little nervous to like get in there.
Yeah, like a little Whitney Houston.
Yeah, get in
on.
Have your moment.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So we were talking a little bit about when I first met you. It was 2014 or 15.
Gosh.
Your kids were very young. Well, you're okay. So there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but okay. I do want to talk to you about motherhood, which I know is not the most important thing. There's a lot of important things. Well, or maybe it is.
It is, though. Okay. It is. And raising kids is not an easy thing. And so I'm not an expert, but I'm clearly willing to share my experiences.
I think you're an expert.
Well, thanks.
How old are your kids now?
Current day, we have a 23-year-old. We have a 21-year-old adult. So son is 23, daughter is 21. Very excited about being a 21-year-old.
Let's go,
Devin.
And
we have a 16-year-old who will soon test for his driver's license. So I'd say like we're in it. We're in a really interesting spot. 23-year-old has entered the family business, and there's a whole lot of adulting that's going on and the realization of what it's like to be an adult, which is it's so not what it's cracked up to be.
No.
And so that's interesting. And the 21-year-old is living her best life, but also she's a woman now. Like she truly is, I would say young woman, but I don't even like she's a woman. And except she still calls and says, "Hey, do you think you could send me a package? And could you look for my bathing suit?" And I'm like, "What do you need your bathing suit in the middle of?"
You never know.
Well, yeah. So she is actually really involved in Penn State's Dance Marathon, which is next weekend, and she will be there for the entire weekend. The bathing suit is to shower because she is very worried about her appearance throughout this experience. She wouldn't want to be photographed in a way that she wasn't fresh.
Aww, I love that.
You might have to take that out.
Okay,
sorry, Devin.
That's okay. I'm sure it'll be okay. Okay, so did you always know you wanted 3 children?
No.
Okay. Is this a sensitive subject?
Well, Brady is the best thing ever, mm-hmm. and Brady's the youngest at 16. I have a great friend who had 3, and I met her when she was pregnant with her 3rd.
Mm.
And so Chad was really interested in having a 3rd, and my friend Robin would be like, don't. don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. It you know, shakes up the whole dynamic. And you, because the older two, right, have a little, there's a 5-year gap between the middle and the youngest. So that was like the
yeah.
dilemma.
Yeah.
Like the well, should we or should we not? And the famous story in the Helmer House is that Chad drove home. He works in Boyertown and works on Saturdays. And he was driving home, and it was the McCungee Halloween parade.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked through our door when we lived in Trexler Town, and he was like, "We're not done yet." And I was like, "Oh, well, I don't know. Like, I've been here all day."
Did he see like a trio costume or something? Like, what did the Halloween parade do?
Looked at, like, the little people toddling along, and just thought. And so that's why Brady's here.
Wow. Yes, yes, the yes. McCungee Halloween Parade inspired Brady Helmer.
You got it.
Okay, so difference in raising boys versus girls.
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, you know, I could get dramatic about it and be night and day. I'm trying. We're trying. To raise young men with sensitivity. And, mm-hmm. and Devin... like she's her own show. Like she is very sensitive underneath, but she presents as if like I've got this whole thing figured out. Mm-hmm. So in some ways it's like there's not this radical difference. I am the same mother. I know things probably more intuitively that piss her off,
yeah.
honestly. And so I know who I need to be for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say it's more about raising each of them as individuals than it is based on their genders.
Interesting. I love that. I love that answer. What would you, okay, so you kind of touched on this, but raising kids today, I mean, I know they're adults now, young adults, but in today's climate, in today's world, how do you navigate that?
I don't know that I do. Like they're, you know, and I look at myself as a mother and I look at who I was, when they were younger and, you know, I was running them into the Swain School and, you know, dropping them off and knowing that I had these people that I trusted,
mm-hmm.
You among them, you know, with my kids and helping, you know, really feeling that, you know, that village concept. And I don't know if it's the change in our own circumstances because they got older or if it's a change in the world, but I don't feel as much of that village any longer, mm. right? And maybe the village is for a period of time and maybe the village changes. Like they have great, you know, role models in their life, but that I feel like something switched during COVID where it became much more inside of your home and processing all these things that were happening in the world inside of your home. And I think we've stuck to that a bit. And I don't know if that's a good thing or, you know, a bad thing. And it's probably honestly different for each one of them,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, of how much that is. But it's hard to find people who are the exact mixture of your value set, who, right, who you would implicitly be like, oh, hey, come be my partner in parenthood.
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of like, pick out, you know, traits or experiences with people here and there, but that feels different to me than how a village once felt.
Yeah, I totally get that. I was just gonna say, I think it's probably just because so much is so much more polarizing,
yes.
in today's world.
Yes, and these kids, they live in that polarization, and they, they know that when mom presses pause on Tom Yamas that we're about to have a moment and
let it rip.
And they, you know, I think that they are, the boys are good natured about it in terms of like, hey mom, like let's take a deep breath. And, Brady's probably trying to figure it out more,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like watching what activism looks like at, mm-hmm. at that age, you know, in his environment. And Devin, where I wondered, you know, like how deeply she would feel about the same things that I did, I think very much does. And so, you know, it's fascinating to watch, but also I feel horribly that these are the conditions and the circumstances, right? When we have discussions. You know, here it's not about, you know, what being a Republican meant
right.
in 1992 is,
or even 2010,
right? Like it's, and so trying to contextualize everything without sounding like, let me take you back to when I walked through the snow with no shoes to get to my school bus, right? And there was just a little key under the mat for me to get, like it adds to that age differential or that feeling like my parents really grew up in a different time. But compared to what is going on in the world, we really did grow up in a different time.
What would you say to young moms who are just having their babies in today's world? What advice would you give them for the young ones?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say to shelter them as much as possible. And I would say to not put a device in their hands for as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot easier said than done, because I also know the temptation to be like, okay, I need to get like, like three things done. And,
yeah.
You know, and here you go. But, you know, I would, that village, I do have a sense of, while I was talking that through out loud, that it is as important for you as a young parent as it is for, you know, for your kids, and to be able to have somebody that you can drop a kid off at and know that they're, you know that they're safe, and that it mostly matches with what you would do if their kid was dropped off in your home or whatever the case is. But I think that's one thing. You know, Brady was in fourth grade, so there's this interesting moment when they were like, I think his class was in seventh grade or eighth grade, and at their little school they would do a big dance, and and one of the other parents who has had like five kids, you know, like very close together, said, I noticed with this cohort that they are they're the least likely to sleep over. They're the least likely to do big group activities. Like you know, you were like cut right in the middle of, you never had a big birthday party. You didn't, you know, like all these things that, and there are things that you read about dating post COVID for these young people and how much that's dramatically changed. And, you know, part of it is the electronics and that influence, but part of it is just the, like at this prime socialization point, things changed pretty dramatically. So, Brady hasn't been in and out of 100 houses that Riley and, you know, and I think that makes an impact somewhere along the line.
For sure.
Yeah.
How many years have you been married?
25 and a half.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So that's, what is 25? Is that silver or gold?
I don't know. We don't do any.
You don't?
No.
I feel like that's a silver, because I think 50 is your gold.
Well,
I could be wrong.
That should be a gold medal.
For sure.
And not one of the Olympic medals that's like falling off of
there. No, I know. I saw that. Get it together.
Like, come on.
Who's making them?
I wondered if China was making them.
Oh, come
didn't you,
on,
really?
Guys. Okay, so 25 years, if you don't mind me asking, because my young mom friends gave me questions to ask you. What were the hardest years as far as like really connecting? Like, what ages were your kids, and how did you find the opportunities to reconnect?
So, right where they're at, those were the hard years, right? I remember having one of these, what would it have been called? It wasn't Gymboree, it was Bounce You, right? Bounce You birthday party, where, honestly, like for a young mom, I was just probably just too cranked up about, I don't know what the whole, but I remember like this tense moment of turning to Chad in this line of kids and being like, did you get the shoes, right? And Chad probably remembers it too, for not very good reasons. And it was like if looks could have lasered each other down, and I was like, oh dear, like we're in the middle of this. And
you were frazzled about like details and logistics, and
we were exhausted. Right?
Yeah.
We both worked, full time. I still had, you know, not that I don't now, but I mean, I had career aspirations along with, oh, okay. And then I'm in charge of like making these little human beings and, you know, into decent vessels to go out into the world
and getting your freaking shoes for Bounce You.
It's not a good memory, and I find this a lot, but just in my coaching practice, where, you know, women typically like have these, like these, oh, let me tell you about this time that I did this. Like we'll be going through an Enneagram assessment and they're like, oh, I'll tell you exactly how this relates. And I'm like, give yourself a break.
Yeah. Right?
That was 15, 20 years ago, except that I'm telling you, yeah. you know, about, about this. And so I need to follow my own advice. But so those were the times that it was the hardest to connect, just from physical exhaustion and guilt of not being around your kids enough. So your kids then, you know, should have your, the disproportionate amount of any free time that you had. It was everybody needs to play soccer. No, they don't. whatever we thought about that. But we probably, when the older two then were in their young teens, I think, maybe even Devin probably was just like 11-ish, and Brady was finally in school on a consistent, you know, basis, we started this Friday lunch. Mm-hmm. And most Fridays for a long time, I knew what it was. When it comes up in my Facebook memories, I'll tell you.
Okay.
But we're talking longer than a decade. That most Fridays we go to lunch together because Chad works on Saturdays. And so when I was at Air Products, did a 4-day work week so that I had Fridays. And when that became an institution,
mm-hmm.
we didn't think we were creating an institution, but we did. And that is, and now Riley is also is in the car business. So he's off on Fridays. So Riley joins and
it's
awesome to have him. And then last Friday he was working, and so we just went, and it's also good to just have that, you know, touch point. And now we can like talk to each other honestly at many evenings of the week because they're doing their own thing, but it's
right.
different. Like it's like we trained ourselves to have like those open air discussions at lunch on Friday, so those still spontaneously kind of happen.
I love that. So when they're kind of what I'm gathering from the Bounce You story, and obviously like you should, I do the same thing where I'm not a mom, but you know, I look back on even ways that like I might've treated my mom in like high school or Absolutely. Something. And I'm like, oh my God, like I wish I wouldn't have done whatever. So I get it. But, I feel like you're describing when they're younger, when you're kind of in the weeds a little bit more and you're with them a lot more, that it's tends to be the harder times.
I think so. And I think if you work, then you have the guilt of, okay, when I'm not working, then I should be momming or dadding. And so it just doesn't leave time to do anything for yourself as well as then anything to nurture your relationship as a couple.
Yeah. And that's a perfect segue because I was just asking you before we started, but you are a self-owned businesswoman.
Yes.
Can you describe what you do?
Yes. So I am an executive coach and team development. I'll say expert because people pay me to do it and they've been paying me to do it.
You're a freaking expert.
Like sometimes when people are like, I'm an expert. Well, define expert for me.
But you are. You are.
So I work predominantly with corporations where I might go in to do a team development activity. I work with high potential individuals in a company where, you know, someone looks and says, we really think this person has a lot of potential. They could sit in our C-suite someday. Let's give them a coach. And people who are under the age of 50, really, I was about to say 45, but people are incredibly comfortable with coaching in a way that previous generations were not. It used to be that like when I was at Air Products, if we said, hey, we're going to get you a coach, it was what do I have to fix?
What's wrong? Right.
And there are times where I work with people who need to fix something or they need to be made aware of something that they need to fix. But most of the time it is about maximizing potential. And that's really cool work to do because there's, you know, I could get really corny about it, but we're all like these incredible vessels of uniqueness. And I think too often in these organizational structures, profit, nonprofit, people think that they have to like water themselves down. And so when they learn a little bit more about, I do 360 feedback, like what is it that really makes you unique and what makes you stand out?
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, what makes you really unique and is a really great strength if we don't watch it, it can also become your liability. And so, mm-hmm. you know, just doing that work with people and opening their own eyes to see how amazing they are and the potential they have and really step into themselves is, that's what I do.
What made you want to do that?
So I grew up in central Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. All right. And everybody in, well, so my grandmother was a nurse. She was director of nursing at a nursing home. She would eventually live in that nursing home then, right? So that's a full circle experience. Yeah. My mom was a nurse who then went into like case management and social work. And my sister, I guess from an earlier point, so my sister is also in healthcare, and maybe my mom thought that Jen had this potential and she was worried about me, right? Because we needed a really like practical job. That was like the key. So
interesting.
My mom said, you know, I really wish you would think about healthcare because people are always going to die and they're always going to get sick. And that was like, I've used that a million times in my life. I know.
You can always count on death. Perfect.
My mom wouldn't listen to this anyway, so we're okay.
Sorry.
However, if you know my mom, it kind of it would make sense to some people. So it was a little dark, but it was also incredibly practical. Like, you know, you don't want to have to worry about, I think, you know, just warrior, right? I want you to be able to have this this steady career progression. And so I remember being in grad school and starting to do some of this work and then get out into the work world. And I call her and I say, good news. People are always going to have issues with each other at work, right? I'm like, I'm good. Like it doesn't come up. It probably comes up like once a year. I just had this meeting 2 weeks ago with a boss that called me for something significant that was happening with a direct report. And it was one of these experiences like we were talking about before where the stuff that happens in real life is actually pretty, pretty juicy. Like you could button up a couple things and throw it on the screen and I would watch it on Netflix. So this was one of those. And I just started laughing. I said, you know, we don't know each other well. I said, I got to tell you though, my mom would love this conversation because it means I really still have job security.
Yeah. So you ignored her and you didn't go, like you, what
oh,
you
no.
decided.
I don't like blood. And,
okay.
And I have not a good thing about, like, something that I think people genuinely appreciate about me is I am very empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not in the right proportion a lot of the time, and I would not be an effective vessel of caring and health because I'd just be in somebody's room like, wait a minute, no, this is, you know,
yeah,
and I'm not good with blood and not, you know.
So you just knew, you were like, no, not for me.
Not
what did you go
me.
To school for?
So I actually was a journalism major with a speech communication minor.
Oh my God.
Right. And then I wanted to be Katie Couric originally. And in the late 80s, early 90s, that was okay. Check out the equipment, right, from the studio. And the cameras were, they were massive and clunky and really heavy. And I'm not like, I just watched you be a real tech wizard. You'd do an interview and you would actually tape it on a tape recorder, and then you'd have to splice the tape together. And at certain points, I'd be like, oh, well, I'm just like,
I can't.
I told that person I would cut that out, but we're just going to keep going because I can't possibly be bothered with this.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of, you know, hone some things. But by the time I was a senior, I had figured this out. The unfortunate part was in that practical orientation, I needed to graduate.
Mm.
So I graduated. I went to the American Red Cross where I worked in nonprofit public relations because that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad calling me one day and saying, you know, I think it's great what you want to do, but you should actually, you need to shoot for living above the poverty line if you want to help people. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. So I went back to grad school.
Okay.
And then that's from there, you know, this all took off. But it was in my sights. It just was a little too late in the education process at undergrad to make it happen.
Well, I think you are walking in your calling because basically what you're doing is lifting people up. And I think that's something that comes very naturally to you.
I think it does too. So thank you.
Yes. Do you Uber?
Yes.
I feel like you're one of those Uber people that you're getting out of the car and you're like, I hope your grandma's feeling better by tomorrow. Give me a call sometime. Are you one of those?
Well, so I have tried to restrain myself as I've gotten older. And one of the things is not to embarrass my children to death, because they will tell you stories about, oh, well, remember when we were at the airport and then blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. But I do have some friendships that have sparked that way, but it's also to protect myself a little bit, because mm-hmm. I'll walk out worrying about the Uber driver that told me that his grandmother was sick, and it would be stalkerish for me to say, hey, can I have your contact information just to ask you about your grandmother? Yeah. And people will say to me, you know, like a client that I haven't talked to in 5 years, and I'll say, hey, whatever happened with your daughter and this? And they'll be like, how do you even remember that? And as I age, it's very genuine for me to say, I have no idea, because yeah. I can't even remember if I took 2 of the pills that I'm supposed to take last night before I went to bed.
So hard to do that.
I know. And so there's something in terms of the way it all works that I am naturally programmed in that way. I've just tried to like a little bit more discernment so yeah. that Jill can remember how many pills she took last night and whatever happened to the client's daughter from 5 years ago.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I understand that balance, but I don't think it's a flaw that you care so Thank much. You. Okay. This is an interesting... Oh, really quick. What advice would you give to someone who wanted to start their own business?
So you were interviewing Veronica. I think you asked her this question and she oh, said, yeah. yes, she said, just go for it. And I was like, oh, that's good. Well, that I could have had that as my answer. I would actually temper that. So what I advise people on is if you have a day job and then you think, ah, gosh, I think I'd love to do this, start this business. We used to call it moonlighting. Do they even call it that anymore? Right. We call you know, your side hustle, but go start it, do it, like have some small way of experimenting with what you want to do and what it would take to actually do it mm-hmm. and start to get work lined up so that transition is just easier for you to do. So it is just do it. It's, you know, don't sit around and wait for the perfect day, because the perfect day isn't going to exist, but do it with a practical edge.
Don't like, cannonball.
No, like if you are going to be on my screen with Tom Yamas, you are doing exactly the right thing, because here you are, you're like starting this, right? Or maybe you're going to take over and substitute for Glennon because Brady Helmer thought that you were Glennon Doyle.
That's the best comp. I'm not going to be able to fit out of this house because my head is so big. Brady Helmer thought. We'll talk about it another time. Okay, this is going to be a weird question, but I was curious because I know you're such a proud Penn State alumni, yes. and I don't know if you know this, but my parents went to Penn State. That's where they met. So I grew up going to Penn State football games. Oh my gosh, we had a motorhome.
You were in it.
Oh, we slept in the Walmart parking lot on Friday nights. I would wake up in Beaver Stadium. I wouldn't even know like that we had driven, and I would just wake up in the tailgate parking lot, and my parents would use me as like a mule to bring beach balls in. I would like hide them under my shirt and then we would blow them up and like put the beach balls all around. Yeah, so it was like a big Penn State. So I'm asking you this question as a fellow Penn Stater.
Okay.
Because you're such a proud Penn Stater, in recent years when the college has faced mm-hmm. controversies, how did you reconcile that personally?
So I have to tell you, this is, I had a moment last week.
Oh.
Like this is probably, so you're like, is there anything you don't want to, you know, so here's the moment.
And okay.
I'm actually really happy that you asked me about this, because I had, it was a complete moment of, I was embarrassed. There was dissonance. Like I was just like, I've never thought about it in this way. And one of the things that I think is really important for the work that I do is for me to be as clean as I can. With mm-hmm. like we're all walking around carrying biases. We're all walking around, you know, with things that just go unchecked. And mm-hmm. so the Penn State thing, right, is, oh, gosh, it gutted me. And
to be specific, we're talking about Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno. Yes. And yes. Okay.
And so so specifically as it, like I would have been out in front of the Center County Prison, like, you know, would you like me to fire, you know, like,
right.
like that to me was horrific. And I had no empathy for anything that man put individuals through. But I had these moments around Joe Paterno, right? Mm-hmm. Because he was such an icon, and because, you know, Chad will talk to you about like riding his mountain bike past his house and like being like, "Hey, coach," and he still walked to camp, right?
Yeah.
Like, and very accessible. And when my grandfather was being treated for cancer, so whether or not he was also being treated for cancer, he would show up in the same location. And, you know, like there was just, he
was a part of your lives.
So here's the funny part of what I'll tell you.
Okay.
Riley, when he was in kindergarten, had Kelly Stout, who's also a huge Penn Stater. And Riley, when he was drawing a picture of something, said, "Well, should I put Grandpa Joe in the picture?" And Kelly assumed, 4 months, that we were related to Joe Paterno.
Nah.
And I was like, no, like, well, that's just how deep the brainwashing went. Okay. So anyway, so last week I had a moment with a friend about the Epstein files, mm-hmm. and whether, if you are in the Epstein files, we were talking about Peter Attia. If you're in there 1,800 times, does that mean that you're a pedophile or not? Mm-hmm. And
it's a casual Tuesday conversation in America. Perfect.
And I get pretty impassioned about this. And so I said 1,800 times, right? And to some extent, okay, fine. Like, if I don't know, like, can you be diagnosed with pedophilia? I don't know. But does it matter? Because he also was around people that he knew, right? And so I really go hard on this, like, who you're in the company of speaks volumes. And I don't care who's in there. And I was a huge Bill Clinton lover. And so obviously I've been through a lot in my life.
Yes, yes.
And there is nobody left for Gen X to look to and be like, oh,
no.
But if Bill's in there to the extent he put him right in, have mm-hmm. him and Donald be in the cell mm-hmm. together. Like, yeah. That's just where I'm at with the whole thing. But as I'm like hitting on this point, I just have this Joe Paterno moment.
Mm. Where you thought, you were like, oh, that just gave me chills.
I was like, chill. And I didn't say anything because I needed to contain myself. And this conversation ended, as suburban women do, like in a nice way, where they're like,
buttoned
whoa,
up.
Whoa,
yeah.
She was a lot. And like, we'll just go on to the next thing. So I'm driving to the next thing. And in the parking lot, I was like, wow. So you just use that as an argument, yet you would have distinguished Joe Paterno and said, well, it was just a different period of time, and what maybe he didn't know fully, but he was in the company of something that had to have his gut go off. And so, yeah, that was kind of a bummer, but
But honestly, I saw this meme where it was like, it's such a sign of intelligence to change your mind.
Absolutely.
And to say, when I was in that space and what I was thinking versus the way the world has moved now,
yes,
there's no shame in acknowledging that.
Yes.
And I, like I said, I only feel comfortable asking you because I grew up, my parents loved Joe Paterno. Yes. There was a picture of my parents with him in we had like a Penn State themed basement, and it was almost like grief. They were really heartbroken.
Oh, this was an idol. This was someone who had, you know, played by the right rules around,
yes,
his team to the detriment of national championships and glory, and you didn't have your name on, like, all of the there. And but it's also the complexity of who we are as humans, that we can do very, very good things,
mm-hmm.
and they're also, and you know, so you could have a day where you were like, well, Joe Paterno, like, I would go nuts when they would stop people on the street, like Jimmy Kimmel or somebody, mm-hmm. would say, who was responsible for the Penn State scandal? And people would say Joe Paterno, and I would like scream back at the TV, it was Jerry Sandusky.
Right.
And Jerry Sandusky did commit those crimes.
Right.
But Joe Paterno was in the presence of Jerry Sandusky.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for answering. I know it's a weird, tough question. Yes. We're like, motherhood, business, the Penn State scandal. But I was thinking of it. I was like, that's an interesting.
It is. And I told Chad about my cathartic moment, but I haven't told anybody else. So you just got it fresh.
Thank you so much. Okay. Sorry, I am bouncing all around. Okay. Well, this kind of goes with what you were just talking about, but in motherhood, in life, in business, in anything. And I asked Matt this question. When you're faced with a tough decision, what morals do you internally lean on the most?
Wow. I didn't get to that part of his interview.
No pressure.
So I'm a big Jesus lover.
Okay. I did not know this about you.
Yes. So a little crap. Yes. So clearly you've had, you know, some moments around organized religion as well in the last few years. But at the end of the day, like that is part of what makes me who I am.
Yeah.
It is when there is chaos that's on the screen, to me, it just waters down really easily of like, well, hello, like this is what love your neighbor as yourself, or you know what
right.
I mean? Like I would say that spiritually, I probably go to that place first. I'm also, you know, integrity is everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a really hard time moving on if somebody has a lapse in integrity and they're willing to own up to it, because I think that's also part of the maturity process and the number of decades we live, we probably have a moment or two. And if somebody's able to see that and ask for grace or forgiveness, make themselves different after, but if not, like my biggest thing with the leaders that we see, you know, that we're exposed to today is that inability to say I made a mistake.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I didn't see the whole video through.
Mm-hmm.
I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Not I didn't make a mistake. Somebody else didn't make me watch the whole video.
Mm-hmm.
Like these moments where I could just like you peel me off of the ceiling.
Yeah.
And that's if we want to pivot back to motherhood. That is what is so incredibly hard about raising kids today, because it's not, and by the way, it's not limited to a party. I don't look to anybody who is consistently on my news screen and say, oh, thank God they're doing it right. Because even those people, I am a Josh Shapiro fan, right? And I think he's carved out this space.
Mm-hmm.
But there aren't enough people carving out a space that to me should be easy enough to step into, because there's such a broad deficit.
Mm-hmm. Do you try? So I never knew that you were you called yourself a Jesus lover. Yeah. But like, is that something that you don't like to share with people? Or it just doesn't like come up, or like, why did I not know this?
I don't know. So I am big with, you know, especially from a social media perspective, right? If we think back to, I blogged for a number of years, and if you went to those blogs, you'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
okay.
it's all in here. I'm not advocating for religion. But I would advocate every single day. You know, I mean, I have an uncle who's a minister. You know, we grew up in the church. And like I said, organized religion is like a whole other.
What church? What denomination?
Methodist.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Cool.
So, you know, in terms of am I wearing it on my sleeve? Maybe I'm not doing that enough. But like, I know this sounds like a goofy thing, but my Instagram stories. Like, I think if you would survey my Instagram stories.
Yeah.
I try to walk this fine line in terms of that with when I'm on Instagram, I'm there as the kid's mom as well as I am myself.
Right.
And so, but I also am pretty consistent with like, oh my goodness, like I just need a 23-year-old male or 22, you know what I mean? Like my kids' friends where I'm like, are they okay with this? Like, have they stopped paying attention? And would they think about this if this came across their, you know,
right?
Because I watch them all in, you know,
of course,
in their phone. So, yeah. But I guess that's my answer.
Yeah. No, I was just curious. And I feel like I already know the answer to this. But does it bother you when you feel like people use the Bible to justify certain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing where, so some of the most frustrating experiences that I've had as we've become more divided as a country are that, what would religion say, or what would Jesus say? Nobody says what would Jesus say, though, because, like, come on, dude, you know what Jesus would say. But if you want to talk about religion, sure, like, maybe you can say that religion could justify what, you know, whatever your experience is. But the other part is that with the work that I do, I know what good leadership looks like. Mm-hmm. And so I've had a lot of people try to explain to me about bold leadership, or being a really good business person, or things that actually are not true underneath the surface. But I could also argue point for point about what a good leader does. I could talk to you about how a leader would have been fired by their board time and time again for behavior that we accept somehow every single day. And so I could step on my soapbox so easily, and have for 8 years, and they're just has fallen on deaf ears.
You're so multifaceted, Jill Helmer, which I knew, but I mean, I love that. Okay, one last question that I forgot to ask you about. Well, actually, I'm going to ask you two more. One of my friends that has young children, she wanted me to ask, was there ever something that you spent a lot of energy worrying about when they were little that looking back, you realized it was all okay?
Brady will never listen to this, right? So I think Brady had a pacifier for a lot longer than he should have. Brady also, he would scoot around on his butt. He walked late, okay? And it was really adorable, and we all thought it was adorable, and that became an issue because then we enabled it. But he also had two siblings that would pick him up, but he would and I was a scooter. I was a late walker, but I would scoot with both hips. He only scooted really by putting more pressure on one than the other. Aww. So we ended up doing OT and all this kind of stuff because it went on for too long. And I remember then at the time of OT being like, oh dear God, like, what were you doing? Like, you thought that this was cute or funny,
right?
And now you're here, and guess what?
Like, it's fine.
it's all good. It's all good. And there are a million moments like that, or a fight with a friend where you are like, oh gosh, you're trying to coach in terms of,
right,
maybe if you said you're sorry, or if you blow this up, or if you make this bigger, and they are very human in the process, and so maybe they do make it bigger, and you just have to sit here and bite your tongue and watch and know that it's their experience, and that it's all okay in the end.
They're so resilient.
Yeah.
Kids are so resilient.
And they have to screw up.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it must be so hard. Okay, last question. What are the biggest lessons that your kids have taught you?
Oh wow, that's good. That's good.
Just realized there's bows on this glass.
Yes, that's a Devin glass. If Devin listens, you just tell her you're using the nicest
Devin
glasses.
I love it.
Wow. So Riley has an expression that he'll use with me, and he'll be like, Mom, it's not that deep. And that's just not anything that's ever been in my experience. Like, everything's deep. Do you not? Like, I love the grapes of wrath,
yes,
and the symbolism and every single, right? And so, you know what? There are times that I say that to myself.
Yeah.
You know, Jill, it's not that deep. Mm-hmm. And so and Riley has a great way about him. He's just like an easygoing kind of personality. And to Riley, there's probably a lot that's
not deep. Yeah.
And so it's good for me to remember, or, you know, there's a great expression about not just don't take yourself so seriously.
Right.
Right. And that's always good to, to flavor in there. Devin just, I think I have always been someone who is goal oriented, but in a, yeah, I'd like to do this someday kind of way. And Devin is more of a, you know, in this time period, this is what I'd like to see happen. And there are many moments where I just take a deep breath, or maybe she should use Riley's advice, like it's not that deep, but she is, she's going to accomplish a lot in her experience. And I can't wait to see what that is, because she isn't like as easily, oh, if it didn't happen this year, it'll happen next year. Devin's like, nope, it's going to, you know, I want it to. And it's amazing to see, and it's amazing to see that grow in her. And she came out of the womb that way. We were just having, Karen and I were having some funny discussions about Devin in the preschool classroom, and Karen's son, Jonathan. Karen walked into the room, and Jonathan was under the table. Oh. And she said, John, why are you under the table? And he said, well, because Devin told me that I should be here.
Yeah. Duh.
And so, you know, she was a born leader, but to see her, like, come into her own and understand, she's, you know, like, the work that she's doing at Penn State, she's in charge of other people, and, like, hell, learning to be
a boss.
But also, like, a boss with empathy, and a boss with, mm-hmm. oh, I hadn't thought about that, Mom. I didn't realize, that's a good point. Like, maybe this is where this is coming from, or this is just the natural turn of events, and maybe I just have to allow for, you know, for some of that in my planning. Like, she will be an exceptional leader because she does have that drive and determination. She's got that vision, but I think she's got the annoying, you know, tap on her shoulder of, you know, growing up in a place of empathy for that to inform.
Yeah.
And Brady Helmer,
the best.
You know what he's taught me is to never say never, or not to, like, he has grown in ways that are unimaginable to me. He you know, so for the person holding the microphone, the podcaster, he only went to his, like, first, like, you did, like, a movie night at the school, and Brady went because Miss Boshin would be there. Remember, he ran in and he saw you. And he, for being a third child, he should always have been a lot more carefree and, like, hey, see you later, Mom, and Dad, too. Like, you know, just, and he wasn't necessarily that way, but now he is, and he's blossoming.
He's out of the shell.
Yeah, and so, you know, you don't know how this whole thing's going to turn out.
Yeah.
And that also just shows that with, you know, with good nurturing, somebody really can come into themselves, which I think that he has.
I love that. So, thank you, Jill Helmer.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a guest. Thank you to everyone who's listening. And most importantly, thank you to Bailey for being our emotional support animal during this episode.
She didn't snore, which was good.
Thanks, Bailey.